The opinions expressed on the Ron and Brian Show, however stupid, do not necessarily reflect the views of the Student Association, the State University of New York, or the staff and management of WCDB Albany.
And now, Ron and Brian.
Brian.
Ron.
Brian.
Is this really happening?
Is this real life?
Are we doing this?
We're going to do it until they kick us out. It's hard to leave. I mean, I guess we should really, we should take it back for the young, for the kids out there, the kids that are listening.
Drop some history. Drop the knowledge.
So, a little over 25 years ago, it makes me feel, I know, it makes me feel old.
1993.
92, this winter of 92.
A different millennium.
Oh, a different century. Generation.
What happened? Tell the people what we did.
We... I don't know if it was arrogance, hubris.
Oh, it was absolutely hubris.
Decided that the city of Albany would want to listen to us for a couple hours straight every Wednesday. And so the Ron and Brian Show was born. And after it was born, we rode that until we just crashed it directly into a wall in spring of 1993, which led to the birth of the Jeff and Brian Show.
Which led to the continuation of a talk show on this entire radio station.
So anyway, now that we're back, you know, Brian and I didn't keep in touch.
I have a slight tendency of going off the radar. It's a habit that I have.
If there are any survivalists out there that would like to learn about going off the grid, disappearing, not being able to be found.
The one thing I learned is that it is quite easy to still exist in a cash-based society.
You were very difficult to track down.
No credit cards for 7 years, no Con Ed, no electrical bill, no telephone bill. I existed purely living off the land.
You were a hunter and a gatherer?
Well, I believe what happened was I read the Unabomber's Manifesto and took it to heart, actually took it quite literally, moved to Montana, bought a little cabin, where I basically grew my own vegetables. It was a solitary life, and I miss it.
What was your go-to vegetable?
The rhubarb.
Huh. Hearty. Comes back every year, whether you want it to or not. And versatile. Savory, sweet, whatever you want to give to it.
It was hearty coming in, and it was hearty going out.
Understood. A lot of fiber there.
So much fiber.
So, reunion weekend comes up. I reach out to... Brian?
Well, I think you're jumping ahead. I think it's important that we go into some detail as to how groundbreaking the talk show was. I think we need to hit some of our high points, some of the interviews we did, some of the interviews we didn't do.
Correct. Well, back in the day, and I'm going to say that often because it's what us old folks say when we are trying to be nostalgic, and we would get a magazine here of people that were releasing books. And because they were releasing books, they were willing to be interviewed for free. So we would do a lot of those interviews. Let's see, we did Daryl Gates, the old LAPD. Not him, but his second in command we interviewed.
And if I'm not correct, he believed that the LAPD, this was during the time of the LA riots, for those that remember. I actually participated in them. It was a glorious time. I was not offended by the Rodney King tape. I actually felt that it was an appropriate level of police clubbing. Brutality is a subjective term. I thought that it was. I just felt, you know, they were trying to stop a man very high on PCP. But I did participate in the looting.
And you weren't even in L.A. This is just in New York you did it.
I went to my local 7-Eleven. I broke the window outside, went into the store, and took 3 hot dogs.
But we digress. We interviewed the author of The One-Hour Orgasm, which was our Valentine's Day show. Very popular.
And it was also, I felt, quite misleading of the title.
It was. It was more... Well, we don't want to have to have Joe utilize the dump button here so early.
He probably already has.
We're probably not even on the air. He's probably just placating us, and we're just talking into these microphones. Jake the Snake Roberts.
One of my personal high points in my life.
You know, former WWF superstar into Albany for a car show, and came to the studio, gave one of the most incoherent.
I believe this was not one of his high points of his life, and I am a better person for having experienced.
If you are into documentaries, there is a pro wrestling documentary called Beyond the Mat, and Jake the Snake is featured fairly prominently in that, and talks about all of the addictions he was going through during the time that we interviewed him, which led to an interesting story, yet very, very uninteresting radio.
I would actually like to point out that I believe we were one of the reasons why he did hit all those lows that he talks about in that documentary.
It's very, very possible.
I'd like to think we played a part in it. He fell asleep in the middle of our interview. I believe that was when he woke up and said to himself, I think maybe it's time for me to learn a new drug.
And the drug was?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I know.
Watch the documentary. That's all we can say. Oh, well, no, we can't.
But he has made a comeback.
I would just like to retract that because...
I believe you just issued a call to action.
The FCC does not allow us to do a call to action, so don't.
Right now, Beaker's head just exploded, and he's filing a complaint with us.
Now, can you do a call to inaction? Like, say, hey, you know what? Don't actually check out the...
I believe you can.
All right, so...
Yeah, it's still an action.
How is inaction action?
Because you're calling them to do something that is not doing.
You know what? Do what you want, people. Don't listen to us. We're idiots.
So I literally, what you're saying, and I'm sorry to break the third, is it the fourth wall or the third wall?
I think we're in the fifth wall.
Okay, right, the fifth wall. I can't even say turn up the speakers, because that's a call to action. I cannot say turn up your speakers because we're getting loud. We're going to go crazy. And
we're gonna pull in super director and producer, Joe Sheppes.
It's DJ and a half.
Sorry.
A call to action, obviously there are certain sentences that are literally calls to action that are ordinary actions. Call to action is something that could be asking somebody to do something for which compensation consideration has been given. So buy my album is a call to action,
gotcha.
But turn the speakers up louder is not.
So we could say take up arms against your oppressors. And that's not necessarily a call to action that we could that we can monetize.
But I could not tell people that they should send checks to my attention, Brian Perlis, my care of me, right, 9310 Queens Boulevard, apartment 7D. That would be a problem. Interesting.
Your address will now live on the internet for a
beautiful
long time.
Beautiful.
Talked about interviews we didn't get to do. We actually had an interview set up with James Earl Ray, the man who assassinated Martin Luther King.
Allegedly,
but he was convicted and went to jail.
If you read his book, he was coerced by the FBI into giving his confession. They threatened the welfare of, it was his brother, I believe.
I think so.
Or a parent, where they said that if he did not immediately plea to a guilty charge, that they were going to take one of his close family members and send them to prison.
So this was around the time HBO did a special where they actually retried James Earl Ray.
Not a high point for HBO. I think when they look back on it, they're going to say this was something we didn't need to do.
So the interview is scheduled for our show on Wednesday. The show airs on HBO on Sunday night in this recreation of the trial. James Earl Ray is found innocent by the mock jury that they brought in. On Monday, we get a call from James Earl Ray's lawyer saying that James Earl Ray has been put in solitary confinement. He has not been able to reach him after the airing of the show, and our interview gets canceled.
Which is quite coincidental, because after graduating from this college, I went into solitary confinement probably for about 20 years.
About that, yes.
Yeah.
Only to be brought out for this, the 40th anniversary of WCDB and the 55th anniversary of WSUA.
And what an incredible weekend it's been.
It's been a nostalgic weekend. It's been an intoxicating weekend on many levels.
I would say that one of the high points for me, you know, having not seen a lot of people for a very long time, was being able to get into a room with people that have been college DJs and realize I know none of them. There were, I would say, a good, how many people would you say were there for the reunion dinner?
We probably had about, 80, 90 people come for the dinner?
I think I knew about six.
Roughly, yeah.
Which we were talking statistically is a lower portion than it should have been.
I feel our generation should have been represented more, certainly the younger generation. Kids, go to your reunions. You don't know when you won't see people again. That's our touching memo for the day. Also, getting to reconnect with our former newsman, Scott Kingsley.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So we're going to get, we'll talk to Scott.
Scott, I hope you are putting together some stories for us to talk about. We're looking for challenging issues. We're looking for topics that are going to enlighten, bring the world some facts. We want things where there are two sides of a coin. I'm not looking for propaganda. I'm not saying that you have in the past approached news in a... And I think that's actually something we can talk about with Scott in a few. It's just the overall change of the news industry as it has gone from a, hey, let's report on what took place to, hey, this is my thoughts.
Right.
On what I believe took place.
Right, exactly. I'm going to make some noise here, maybe, if I move this microphone. Am I still talking? Am I talking?
I hear you. I hear you.
Push it up a little. Pot it up. Proper modulation.
Modulation.
All right.
Yeah, see, this is good. Now,
this
now
works.
You're right in my line of sight.
This
a little awkward going this way, but
this
now.
This reminds me back in the day. Now, we just want to make a disclaimer. We do not anticipate that any of you out there will be entertained by this. This, again, is very self-indulgent for us. That's about all I can say.
I'm going to say this. I'm actually going to go on the assumption that nobody is listening right now.
Right.
That whoever was listening to the previous show has literally turned off their radio, gone to sleep, kicked the dog, hit the wife, and in frustration because they're waiting to hear a Lemonhead song. And that's not what we're not bringing that.
We're not bringing that. We may play some music. I haven't quite decided. We actually got some stuff queued up though, so that's because DJ and a Half is more than just a DJ. He's a DJ and a half. And
what has he queued up? Like actual music?
Yeah. I did give him the song list, so he is.
And he queued that up.
He's queued the first one up.
The technology of radio has moved quite forward in a world where most people plug their phone into their cars and simply listen to what they've already heard.
I mean, you know, we are actually sitting around a table that used to be just stacked with equipment, and now everything's consolidated down.
There are now three microphones in a room where there used to be one.
That's right. So do we want to start with some topics?
Sure, why not?
We would talk about issues of the day when we were initially doing this show. So that was kind of our thought as to, you know, we came up with a list of things to discuss. Do we want to get into the meat of it, just start at the beginning and run through?
I think we've set ourselves up in the first 20 minutes. We've set the tone. I think people now know what they're going to get. I believe we've reached that moment.
Plus, while Scott is here, I think it's appropriate.
We need to
start.
Utilize.
We need to utilize the I guess somewhat of an opposing point of view. Scott, you do tend to trend on the conservative side of things.
I do.
And why is Brian and I tend to go, I don't want to say liberal, I'm more moderate. I don't know how you would.
I'd actually like to consider myself more of a libertarian.
Okay.
Where I really believe in as little influence by the government in my life as possible.
All right. So in a way, kind of really close to Republican values to an extent.
No, not at all. I absolutely think that they are quite opposing. And I'm ready to prove it.
Well, we'll definitely get there.
Welcome to Point Counterpoint.
So we were going to discuss basically Donald Trump and the decline of America.
See, you start with Donald Trump, or you think that is the... That's the apex of the decline of America.
Oh, I don't think we've seen the apex of the decline of America.
Where would you, as an observer of society, as a participant of history, where would you say the decline started?
I mean, I will go back and say I feel the decline started during the Clinton administration. I think, and I will, I think when all of us in this room were coming up and being brought up, there was a level
I believe of, President Clinton was also coming up at the time, so
there was a level of respect that was afforded to the office of the president that was just a given, that if you didn't like the president, you still respected the president. And I think what Bill Clinton did, you know, for all of his achievements, he was a very flawed man in certain ways.
Are we not all flawed men?
We are all flawed. And I feel that his interactions with Monica Lewinsky and then his attempts to cover that up, I think really brought the presidency to a level of where people said, oh, the president can be as flawed as we are. And maybe we don't need to 100% respect that person. And can be openly disrespectful to the president.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
Scott, that was an incredibly poor Bill Clinton impersonation.
Yes, do not call 911. Scott was not having a mini stroke. That was just an impersonation.
Yes, it was a poor impersonation, as I was a poor president.
And this is why Scott Kingsley is a genius. He went right back into the same poor impersonation. I would say that we need to go a little further back in time to a man, Richard Milhouse Nixon, who I believe taught this world that the president was not an infallible character.
True.
And it was an abuse of power. I believe we lost a certain sense of just inherent faith in our world. And personally, I blame G. Gordon Liddy.
I mean, I think the difference there was an actual punishment that was given to Nixon. You know, he had to resign the presidency. Whereas with Clinton, I think where the frustration came for a lot of people is
he had to go home every day to Hillary Clinton.
Well, there's that.
That was, I believe, punishment enough.
But he clearly was in the wrong, was impeached, and nothing came of it. So, you know,
I have to correct you. Richard Nixon was not impeached.
Oh no, I'm not saying
we're
he was
talking
impeached.
Clinton.
I'm talking
here.
About
we
Clinton.
Moved on.
Yeah.
Ron basically rejected my entire argument about Nixon.
No, I'm not saying
it. Brought it back to Clinton and just continued with his argument. This is what made our talk show so great, was that you would inherently disagree with me, my points, what I was bringing to the table. And keep in mind, at the time, I was in college where I was 19, 20, 21. I didn't have the clearest of heads at the time. I didn't really have the world view that I do right now. And yet you're still rejecting everything that I mentioned.
I would like to say I did not reject everything. I just pointed out what I felt was the difference between the two situations.
Okay, so going back to your point that Clinton's issue, we'll call it an issue.
Okay.
Just being that he was married to Hillary Clinton.
A kerfuffle, perhaps?
Ooh, a kerfuffle. I love it.
With
I feel
the
like
devil,
I just,
with the blue dress on.
I believe I... Ooh, it's all right. See? He makes a blue dress reference.
This is why we bring Scott Kingsley in, for the little zingers that you'll get from time
and
to time.
And that is where you think where things go downhill.
I think for the modern generation, yes. I think that's where it starts to go downhill.
Interesting. Very interesting. And then where do you see the continuation of that?
I think that there is a...
I certainly feel that we have recently hit an abyss and just dove right down.
I think that there is a frustration in America. With everybody's just frustrated now. I mean, let's go to the conservative point of view. Scott, your thoughts on how the current administration has been progressing. I will assume that you are a Trump supporter and voted for President Trump.
I did not in the primaries.
Okay.
I voted for Governor Kasich of Ohio.
Good choice.
In the general election, yes, I certainly did vote for President Trump because it was a bilateral choice between Donald Trump and the worst presidential candidate of all time, Hillary Clinton, who I could not support.
Worse than Ross Perot?
Worse than Walter Mondale?
Well, Walter Mondale, I mean, you could disagree with him politically, but at least he was a person that I could respect.
Okay. What about Dewey? I mean, let's take it back. I mean, we all look back and just say, hey, listen, it was an incredible win by Harry Truman. You know, he was not expected to win that election. But I thought, if you look at the stances of the two candidates, I would say that Dewey, I don't remember his first name. I don't know that anybody in this room does. Feel free to jump in if you do. He was the worst presidential candidate.
I believe
ever.
It was Thomas Dewey.
Thomas Dewey?
I believe
we had people at the reunion last night that covered that 48 election for WSUA.
I would agree with that. So, Scott, so again, you voted for President Trump.
How do you feel he's done?
Well, I guess a bigger question is, in voting for him, you basically said it was a choice because you felt Hillary Clinton was the worst political candidate in history. Which we can debate that back and forth. But I guess the question is, was it frustrating for you that you couldn't... Was there any part of you in casting that vote said, I'm voting for the best available candidate, period?
I really struggled with my vote in the general election. Probably to about 3 weeks prior, I intended to vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate. But then, as politics they get tribal. And as I'm involved in local politics in Saratoga County, and as the Democrats try to wrap Donald Trump around all Republican candidates who are friends of mine, and tried to label them, sexist, homogenistic, and try to label those labels around what Trump was being called at the time, and it still is being called, I got tribal. I rallied around the flag and supported the president for election.
And your thoughts? I mean, we're 14 months in almost at this point, 13 and a half. Thoughts on his progress so far?
I like the policies. Don't like the personality. I've never liked Donald Trump's personality. Going back to when he single-handedly sank the USFL in the 1980s. If you haven't seen any documentaries on the USFL, I won't name specific ones because I don't want to get that call to action, as we talked about earlier. But definitely take a look at some of those and kind of see how that all went down in the 80s. But policies, I think, have been good. I'm getting more in my paycheck. I don't know about all of you out there in Radioland, but...
Now, hold on a second, because now I'm going to have to interrupt you. You're going to sit there and say that you feel grateful to the president because you're seeing more in your paycheck. Percentage-wise, if I may ask, how much more are you seeing? Is it changing your life? Because I'll tell you exactly where I'm going with this. Is that this was, once again, another example of trickle-down economics, where you started off giving a huge tax break and literally a cash handout to the 1%, to corporations, and literally expecting that the bottom 50% of the American society would see a small bump in their take-home pay and be grateful, not realizing that what had really happened was a huge amount of money was taken from the government and handed to the wealthy, and we were all supposed to sit there and just go, hey, I'm getting an extra $75 a month, and I'm pretty cool with that.
Statistically, when you have a progressive income tax system, which we do in the United States.
Scott, please do not use fancy terminology. You're only trying to confuse me. I understand your approach. This is classical Republican politics. You go for multi-syllabic words in an attempt to just befuddle me, and that's what happens.
You are just jealous that I can use multi-syllabic words.
Although, good use of the word befuddle.
Oh, I was befuddled.
So, props to you.
Well, you said kerfuffle earlier, so I had to come back with befuddled.
I was an English major, though, so that's about all I have.
I was a history major. Literally useless.
But, Scott, you were making a point, please.
Yes.
I was hoping we could just move on. And then I was hoping we could literally spend the entire show doing nothing but tangents and then continuing to go back to Scott's point, getting off of it again, returning to it.
Kind of like it was 25 years ago.
Exactly.
nothing changes, and yet everything changes.
But yeah, I mean, I think Brian brings up a good point. Everybody talks about the average American getting, $4,000 from this tax break. But, I think the adage was also made, if there's 10 people and I have 10 apples and I give one person 10 apples, well, the average person got one apple. So why are the other 9 people mad at me? And that's kind of what's happened.
Exactly.
You have people with more money that they can ever spend in a lifetime receiving more benefits than the average American does.
How is that progressive? Scott, all you.
It's not progressive. But we're a capitalistic society. People get to reap the rewards of their hard work.
Would you say that the Rothschilds are working hard right now?
Probably not.
Would you say that the Trump children are working hard? Well, no, they actually are working hard, dealing with their lawyers, trying to cover up collusion. So
allegedly.
Allegedly. No, I would say they're definitely working with their lawyers. Quite, their legal bills are quite impressive, I would imagine.
And I think, again, that's where a lot of this frustration comes from. Would you not have to agree that Trump, the family, as a brand, has benefited financially from this presidency? That his hotels have benefited financially from his presidency? His office buildings, where in Trump Tower, the Secret Service spends a ridiculous amount of money on rent each year.
I believe I read it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars every month.
But that's true of every president.
Name the last president that owned a hotel chain.
Not specifically, but you take a look at the personal homes of every president going back to World War II. Their homes had to be Secret Service upgrade. The LBJ's and George W. Bush's Texas's ranch, Reagan's ranch out in California. Obama's home in Illinois.
But I think the difference in that is...
You're talking about somebody's personal home being upgraded in terms of security. Where
Donald Trump's personal home is Trump Tower.
Well, his personal home is the White House.
Okay.
Which he denigrates, on as often a basis as he can.
I will say this. Huge fan of the tweets. I have to say I'm a huge fan of the tweets. And what I've also... one of the things that I most enjoy about his tweets is trying to decipher whether it's a tweet he has written or a tweet that has been written for him. Because your average holiday, say on Memorial Day, I woke up and looked at my phone and I saw Donald Trump had tweeted. And it's a well-written, grammatically correct, patriotic message. Still under 140 characters, so he hasn't quite hit the 280. I don't think he's gotten to that realization that he can write longer tweets. And then 20 minutes later, you get something where it's just like, wrong, bad politics, all capitals, exclamation, lots of adjectives. And then that is something he wrote.
Sure.
So, Scott, you were saying about a progressive tax policy. Let's take it back.
Anytime that you are going to have any kind of increase in taxes, yes, the wealthy are going to get more in real dollars, even if the tax rates are less. You give me a 3% deduction in marginal rates, I'm still going to get less money back than if you give a wealthier person a 1% or a 0.5% break. But no poor person has ever given me a job. Okay, the key to the tax reform bill was not the personal income tax cuts, though I'll take it. The key was the corporate tax rates. We are now competitive with the rest of the world. So when in this global society where businesses can locate anywhere, they are now choosing to locate in the United States because we've got the best workforce, but now economically we can be competitive.
I got to stop you there, Scott. You made the comment of that we have the best workforce. Can you please defend that comment? Because I think we have a terrible workforce. I currently work in human resources, I would like to say. I interview people for a living. And I would have to say that we have a workforce that generally is overly entitled, does not want to work hard. I think maybe our parents' generation their parents' generation, those people believed in working hard. They woke up, they had a purpose. It wasn't about how much time can I goof off at my desk texting my friends while still expecting a paycheck. I actually have employees that that want to pick and choose the different tasks that they want to do. Ron, are you just like befuddled at staring around? I love watching you right now. You're so distracting. I feel that you look at some of the migrant farm workers that have entered the country legally, illegally. I don't know. I'm not pointing fingers, but you show me someone that wants to work in a kitchen, literally washing dishes for $8.50 an hour.
Well, and if I can, I will disagree with you partially, Brian.
Please do so. I would actually be disappointed if you completely agreed with me.
I mean, I feel there definitely is a percentage of the workforce that is very entitled. But I feel that there is also, you know, part of the issue with the workforce is that it's an overworked workforce.
You know, you believe America is overworked?
I think that there is a percentage of Americans that are overworked because of the amount of hours that people need to work to afford to live below the poverty level.
I completely agree with you.
You know, there is not, I mean, I believe the statistics are that there is not a state in this country right now where someone can work a minimum wage job 40 hours a week and afford, you know, like a two-bedroom apartment.
The minimum wage was never designed to be lived on. It was designed for unskilled, and entry level positions. The problem is every time you raise the minimum wage, the entire workforce suffers. Having been an employer myself, okay, my payroll's my payroll. This is the amount of money I can spend. So for every dollar in payroll that I've got, that I have, that I paid to my employees, I got to pay Social Security tax on them. I got to pay Medicare tax on them. I got to pay retirement on them. I got to pay disability insurance on them. Employees are expensive. So every time you raise the minimum wage, who gets screwed? The middle class gets screwed because they don't get raises. The middle class doesn't get raises because they're subsidizing the person behind the McDonald's lunch counter.
So what I'm
still
hearing,
can't get my order right.
What I'm hearing from you
is that Scott Kingsley still goes to McDonald's.
Well, and he hates poor people.
Apparently. Well, let me
ask you this, Scott. Are you a man of faith in any way?
Yes.
Are you not your brother's and sister's keeper?
Yes.
Should, you know, if there is one of us amongst us that wants, do we all not want?
Preach on.
So why are you going to denigrate the people that are poor, that are playing against a stacked deck?
In many cases, these are people that are born poor. These are people that are born that never had an opportunity to be able to pull themselves up out of poverty. In the same way that the children of the one percenters were born rich and never had to worry about going to McDonald's and getting their order correct. We've got dead air. If you're going to make an argument, you got to just jump in.
I will tell you that I don't apologize to anybody who's worked hard and has left a good life for their children. I think that's the wish of every parent.
But, you know, here's the thing. The individual tax rate for the top 1%.
We're going to have to change the subject very soon because I think if there was any chance of anyone being entertained by this other than three of us, I did not think we were going to spend this much time talking about tax rates.
I understand. Well, we'll get off of that in a second. But
I do want to talk about LeVar Bell, gun control. Keep going.
But the individual tax rate for the top 1% is lower than it has ever been in history. Would you agree with that? I mean, wasn't it in the 80 percentile when Reagan was president?
When he first took the office, it was like 75%.
And now
it was lowered, and then it was raised.
And continuously lowered, though. And it is lower now than it's been in the history of this country.
I'd have to do the research.
I'm ahead of you. And so that's why I don't understand if they've already over the past 20 years gotten basically a 50% bump in their take-home pay, let's say, Plus, I mean, between S corps and LLCs and everything else, you know, there's so many ways. And that's the other thing, the way that the
poor people don't have, the poor do not have the opportunity for offshore shell accounts to hide their funds.
So all I'm saying is,
Scott, you're wrong.
I am not wrong.
I don't feel
I am right, and the American people agree with me. Not the people of Albany. Obviously, they disagree with me.
Well, I would say the popular vote indicates that America didn't agree with you either.
We don't have a popular vote. They weren't the rules.
I'm just
if
saying.
They were the rules, the campaign would be differently.
I'm just saying.
Which takes me back to my argument that the founding fathers did not trust the general population. The founding fathers, actually, if I'm not correct, and please, as a history major, correct me if I'm wrong about history, but wasn't it originally that you needed to be a landowner to even be eligible to vote?
That is correct.
So right off the bat, it was a system set up where the wealthy were the people that counted more than the non-wealthy?
Because in 1787, those are the people who could read.
Also a good point.
I think that leads us to gun control.
Not just yet. I'm also curious, because since we've got Scott here, and I know he's going to have to go eventually
Scott,
and go to work.
What time do you have to leave? It is currently 4:42. We've been here for 42 minutes.
I could probably, about a half hour, 45 minutes more.
All right.
Okay, good, good.
So let me ask you this. You know, again, you voted for President Trump.
Reluctantly.
Were you surprised that he won the election?
Yes. I think everyone was surprised that he won the election.
I believe he was surprised.
And why do you think he won the election?
I think he won the election because the American people rendered their judgment on Hillary Clinton 8 years ago, decided that she can't and shouldn't be president, and they gambled.
They being the American people?
Yes.
Or they being the Democratic Party by nominating her?
Both.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think you also have to throw some of the blame at the DNC. You know, they obviously wanted Hillary Clinton to be the candidate. They did everything they could to keep, you know, Senator Sanders. Here's a good question for you. Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, who do you vote for?
Oh, just based on policy, I vote for Donald Trump.
What about character?
We were taught in the 90s that character doesn't count.
Okay, how does this one? I'm going to throw one other example for you. Kermit the Frog versus Donald Trump. Who do you vote for?
Hey ho, Kermit the Frog.
Oh God!
Why did you have to pull?
I didn't know. I didn't remember.
Okay, here's one: Marv Albert versus Donald Trump.
Yes, and it counts.
Okay, we just had to. We had to indulge Scott for a moment. I mean, you know, I think it was. Yeah, you know, I think it's very simplistic, and I'm not downgrading your argument to say that it was a mandate against Hillary Clinton. I think it was. I think the problem is there wasn't, you know, one thing, and I think everyone's trying to analyze this one thing. I think there are people that will vote Republican regardless. I think that there are people that are not able to vote for a woman. You know, I think what it also came down to is I think a lot of Trump supporters or people who ended up voting for him were, I think, a little tired of being insulted by the media in the months leading up to the election. You know, the two things I always look back at when I think back as to how we've gotten here is I look at when Trump started to become a legitimate candidate and people started looking at who's supporting Donald Trump. And the big thing they kept throwing out was, well, it's uneducated white males.
Why living in the flyover states?
Why were they uneducated? Because they only graduated from high school? I mean, I think, you know, you and I are living proof going to college doesn't always prove anything. You can go to trade school. You can go to the military. So then the rhetoric slightly changed, and they started calling them, well, it's the undereducated white male, which I think is much more condescending.
That's actually worse. That's actually worse.
And I think the other point that people kept trying to drive home is, and Bill Maher, I think, was one that, like, trumpeted this so much, is he said, you know, your annual Trump supporter is a white male earning $74,000 a year. He's doing just fine. And I think the problem is that people assume that middle America is doing just fine. Because when I look at it, if you're a single-income household, married, two kids with $74,000 a year, Are you fine in this day and age?
No.
Can you afford a mortgage, a car payment, maybe two car payments, food, utilities, phones, you know, taxes, health care? And then at the end of the day, well, let's see if you've got some money to put aside for your kid's college fund and for your retirement.
If you're living in the flyover states, you probably are doing fine, where cost of living is, you know, really, really cheap. If you're living in New York, not so much.
But it's these flyover states that voted for him. So I think my point is, were the Democrats overestimating how fine those people are doing? I think there's a tremendous amount of panic and desperation within the middle class, and they don't feel that they're being taken care of.
I think they were feeling that their culture is under attack. I think they voted more along
under attack
those
by the Russians?
Under attack by the mainstream liberal media.
Oh, so you do believe in the mainstream liberal media?
Well, I mean, you can't deny that.
Well, I would argue that there
every
is...
Every poll of the press going back to World War II, in every presidential election, the press votes about 85% Democratic.
Right. That's...
Scott was in the red. I had to... That's a little technical term. I had to bring him down a little bit.
When you
bit.
Said he was in the red, are you saying that he was a Russian troll set to bring this country down?
You know, I can neither confirm nor deny that.
I just wanted to say this is the fact that I believe that the entire system that we have here is set up to maintain wealth within the wealthy. I believe that the middle class are there to ensure that the lower class have something to aspire towards. I think the poor are there for the middle class to be afraid of and to continue to work hard. I know, you know, I'll look at myself and I'll say I wake up 5 days a week and go to work. And I do that because I do not want to be homeless. I do not want to be poor. I understand that the odds of me becoming wealthy to the point of a mansion, a millionaire, things like this, odds of that happening, very slim. I'm not looking to, I'm looking to make sure I don't slide down. And I would actually say that is my overall belief in the way the American economy is set up.
That is very cynical.
But there's also a lot of validity to that. And I think the cynicism is what's driving.
Which is why when I see a tax deal that says, hey, let's put more money in the hands of the wealthy, let's help the middle class a small amount, and they're going to believe that they've been taken care of and that they've been rewarded when in all likelihood they've gotten a small sliver of the cash that's been handed out.
Well, when we come back in 2020, in the next presidential election,
let's
take a look at the results and see where we are.
Well, I think you'll know this November. Yeah, I think there'll be a very definite message sent one way or the other. I think in these midterm elections, with so many, you know, with all of the House of Representatives seats up for grabs, you know, and a number of Senate seats and a number of, you know, governor seats, I think the American people will send a mandate to one party or the other. Don't you agree, Scott?
It will be interesting to see what happens. You have a lot of cross currents going on. You not only have the federal, but you have about 36 governors.
Exactly.
Now you take a state like New York, which is a blue state that would tend to, you know, want to put Democrats in on the federal level, but we have a governor that is increasingly unpopular every day. His polls are tanking, especially upstate. It'll be interesting to see where those cross currents, you know, lead. Do the voters split their tickets between Democrats at the federal level and Republicans at the state level, or do they go straight ticket one way or the other? It'll be very interesting to see.
Now, another question I have, and we'll get off the Trump topic momentarily, but I'm just curious again to pick Scott's brain.
If I can interrupt you for a moment,
of course.
I just had a brilliant idea.
Did you? I love your brilliant ideas. You know I did.
I would like to do a speed round of literally picking Scott's brain,
right,
of where we throw out a topic and you say pro or against. If we need to delve deeper, we do. But just we'll just like a speed round to maybe like 15, 20 different topics. I want to do this before he leaves.
I just want to clarify so the you know the current general manager doesn't panic. This is a speed round, does not mean there's speed in the building.
Ooh.
I wish I had queued up the cricket sound effect.
That was terrible.
So anyway, all right.
I believe she's sleeping right now and has no idea what's going on in her station. If she did, the phone line would be ringing or she would be walking in here and shutting things down.
The power would have been cut.
Yes.
So, Scott, it's becoming more and more evident that the Russian government was involved in tampering with the presidential election in 2016. So, not even touching the subject of potential collusion or anything else. Do you not feel that if there is a potential that a foreign government was involved in swaying our election in any way, shape, or form, that that should be investigated? That any Americans that are connected with that should be prosecuted? And systems should be put in place to prevent that in the future?
I think in this age of social media, we should be concerned about any country trying to influence our elections. But to think that we haven't tried to do the same in other countries is very naive.
Listen, it's very much pot calling the kettle black, you know, for people in government to, you know, complain about. Yeah, I mean, we certainly do not have the best history in being involved in other countries' politics.
But that is no excuse to allow it to be done to us.
Exactly. It's not an excuse. It didn't make it right when we did it. But it also doesn't make it right to try and ignore it when it happens to us.
I agree. The special prosecutor is in his investigation. He's already indicted 13 Russian nationals. We'll see where the investigation goes.
One thing that I will be interested to see, let's say Trump makes it to 2020. And let's say he actually wants to run again. I know there's, you know, questions.
Didn't he announce just this past week that he was announcing his re-election campaign?
I mean, I don't know that he's happy being president.
Like I don't believe he's happy whatsoever.
So, but in seeing what has happened to the Paul Manaforts of the world that worked for the Trump campaign and, you know, are now going to be doing some jail time, do you feel that if Trump does run again, are people even really going to want to be connected to the campaign, knowing that the level of scrutiny that will then bring to their personal lives? Are there enough people with clean records in Washington that would actually work that campaign?
I think you might have trouble getting people at the top levels of the campaign, but in both parties, young people are going to gravitate and work in campaigns at any level because they want the federal jobs if their candidate wins.
All right. I'm thinking you want to do a speed round. I'm thinking why don't we take a breather, play a little bit of music.
Why not?
Because it is a radio station. That will allow us to have a glass of water